This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. We've got another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime for you this week, as we do every Wednesday. First off is yours truly, Johnny Dollar. His story from November 20th, 1960, titled The Double Deal Matter. After that, it's Dragnet and the Big Trio. Their story from July 3rd, 1952.
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. The Mono Guarantee Insurance Company, Little Rock office. The following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Double Deal matter. Expense account item 1, $14.10, plane ticket from Hartford to Philadelphia, PA. Item 2, $6.25, taxi and tip for the ride into Eastern Trust and Insurance on Walnut Street. Hiya, Ted.
Mighty glad you could make it, Johnny. How are you?
So they made you the big wheel in this office, huh?
Made me the goat, is more like it. Sit down.
Yeah, sure. Now, what's this about Mickey the Hood?
Michael Jonathan O'Banion. Oh, it's a nice, respectable-sounding name, but... Oh, brother, what a character.
Bootlegger, among other things, wasn't he?
Rum runner, gun runner, smuggler, jewel thief. Mm-hmm. Probably a killer, too, back there in the 20s. Only they could never pin it on him.
Yeah, a real nice boy.
Well, after he served his term in order to fill out his parole, he worked for one of the drug companies here in town.
Oh.
And then about, 2 years ago, he opened a little importing company. Probably just a front.
Importing?
Yeah, drug imports, mostly from the Far East. And that's when Bruce Terwilliger sold him all his insurance.
Terwilliger?
Yeah, my predecessor in this job.
Oh.
That's when he sold Mickey all his insurance. Nearly a $500,000 coverage on his business. I'm sure it's not worth a tenth of that. And over $250,000 on his life.
Sounds as though he's still in the rackets.
Sure. And wants plenty of coverage in case he gets bumped off. And he should have been, long time ago.
All right, who's his beneficiary?
Oh, hold your hat, Johnny. Mary Toodles Baker.
Toodles?
Yeah. She's a cheap stripper, right out of the saloon circuit.
So you want to take him off your books, huh?
Oh, he's a bad risk. He's constantly behind in his premium payments, and he... Well, I just don't want him as a client of this office.
Well, I can't say I blame you.
But this dear old saintly conservative company won't let me cancel his policies until I can get some legal proof.
Prove he's still in the rackets, huh?
Yeah. And Johnny, that's your job.
Oh, now wait, Ted.
Yeah?
That's not for me. That's a police job.
Yeah, but they haven't got a thing on him, Johnny. So far as they're concerned, he's behaving himself, staying out of trouble, and just running his drug business.
Yeah, but you think differently.
Well, I bet my bottom dollar on it. And Johnny, if you can prove
it... Oh, look, Ted, what am I supposed to do? Stick my neck out to a punk like Mickey just because you have a hunch about him?
Oh, a hunch?
No, thanks, Ted. If a guy like that happens to be involved in fraud against the company, something like that, you call on me and I'm stuck with him. But to try to frame him for you when there's no real evidence against him.
Frame him? Wait, I didn't say that. Just show him up for a wrong guy.
Look, when he commits some offense against the company, okay. But until then... sorry, Ted, but it's no go. No, you mess around a character like that without legitimate reason, I'd end up with a hide fire, Ted.
Okay. I suppose all I can do is wait until it's too late. And we have to pay him a lot of money on some fraudulent claim or on his rotten carcass.
Afraid so.
Oh, Johnny, if you'd only... Oh, excuse me. Ted Planer.
Well, that's all you wanted me for.
Dollar?
Hmm?
What did you... Look, talk a little slower, will you? Well, yeah, he's right here.
What's that?
Here, look.
Crazy.
He said he traced you here through your call service back in Hartford.
Okay, let me have it.
Ask me the guy's off his rocker.
Johnny Dollar. Hello?
Heaven only knows what might happen.
Hello? Well?
John Dollar?
Yeah, that's right.
John, you must come to see me at once.
Who's that?
The most terrible thing has happened. Yes.
Yes, what?
This is Harry Branson at Philadelphia Mutual Liability and Casualty.
Oh, I might have known.
What?
Nothing. What seems to be the trouble, Harry?
Disaster, John, disaster. Can you see me at once?
What about?
The famous Canary Diamonds. Listen, John.
Oh, now, wait, Harry. I brought those things back from France some months ago.
I know. But now they've been stolen again.
They what?
Yes. John?
Okay, Harry, I'll be right over.
Now, who the devil was he?
Well, now that insurance man wants to hand me a case that I can really do something with.
Oh?
And he'll pay me a pile of dough if I can solve this theft for him.
Theft?
Yeah. Hey, wouldn't it be nice if I could sort of tie Mickey the Hood in on it?
Johnny, are you serious? You really think you could?
Ted.
Yeah, Johnny.
Fat chance.
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment.
Have a commander, welcome aboard. Have a commander, welcome aboard. The cleaner the tobacco, the better it tastes. Have a commander and see. The cleaner the tobacco, the better it tastes. And in commander, the tobacco is vacuum cleaned. Have a commander. Welcome aboard.
Treat yourself to a pack of new king-size Philip Morris Commanders made on a new machine, the Mark 8, that takes rich, full-flavored Philip Morris tobacco and gently vacuum cleans it. And the cleaner the tobacco, the better it tastes. Yes, the cleaner the tobacco, the better it tastes. Noticeably better.
Have a commander. Welcome aboard.
And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Double Deal Matter.
I found Harry Branson pacing the floor, wringing his hands.
John, thank heaven.
So the Canary Diamonds have been stolen again.
Terrible, terrible.
But I thought they were insured by
you. They got so much publicity when you recovered them from that smuggler over in France that one of our important clients, Mrs. Arthur Pierpont Galloway, just had to have them. So she bought them and then insured them with us.
How much, Harry?
$515,000.
Wowee.
She received a phone call that one of the national magazines wanted pictures of them there at her home.
The call was a phony?
She thought her chauffeur and butler would be protection enough, but when the man came, well, he tricked her into being alone with him, and, well, he just walked off with the diamonds.
Well, they must have a description of him.
Of course they have, but a rather confusing one. They were all so excited.
So, what about the police?
Oh, dear, the police have showed Mrs. Galloway and the chauffeur and the butler so many pictures of criminals, they just don't know which is which.
Oh, fine.
But the police seem to think if they have some ideas about who this terrible thief might be.
What about fingerprints, that sort of thing?
Oh, he was far too clever for anything like that.
I suppose so. Hey, I wonder if the chauffeur or the butler could be in cahoots with this man.
Absolutely not.
Well, you sound pretty sure of that.
I know both of them myself, have known them for years, ever since they went with Mrs. Galloway, and I'm certain they are absolutely honest. After all, John, I am an excellent judge of character.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure of that. Now, who's in charge of this case at headquarters?
At central headquarters, Lieutenant Bernard Barry.
Bernie Barry? Sure, I know him well.
Now, here, I'll give you Mrs. Galloway's address.
Don't bother, Harry, not yet.
Oh? John, you mean you might have some idea who might have done this?
Not the least.
But unless you see and talk with
her...
But
as long as the police have some ideas, why don't I see them first?
Oh.
Yeah, I'll give it a fling, Harry.
Give it a fling?
Sure, as long as I'm already here in Philly.
John, how can... Don't you... $515,000.
Yeah, that's a lot of dough.
Then how can you be so casual? You don't even seem to be really interested. John, think of what your commission will be if you effect a recovery.
Do you think I'm thinking of anything else? I walked on over to Central Police Headquarters and talked to Lieutenant Bernard Barry.
You asked me, Dollar, that thief had concealed his identity pretty well.
Oh, what do you mean, buddy?
Well, according to their descriptions, he must have been wearing enough makeup for a whole chorus line. But why Mrs. Galloway and her servants didn't realize that right in the beginning and throw him out, I'll never know.
That's why they couldn't pick him out of the mug file, huh?
Except for one thing the chauffeur noticed about him.
What was that?
He'd apparently tried to cover a scar on his face.
Oh?
From the outer edge of his left eye down his cheek.
Wait a minute.
Yeah?
Maybe 5'8" or 5'9". Very heavy. Say a couple of 100 pounds.
Yeah, darling, I'm way ahead
and
of you.
And say about 51 or 2 years old.
Well, with all that make there to make it look gray, we found traces of the powder.
But Mickey the Hood. Mickey O'Banion.
So we've had a tail on him every minute since the robbery was reported.
And?
Nothing, darling. Nothing at all. And, of course, he had an airtight alibi.
Oh, sure he would have.
And, of course, so would any other crook smart enough to pull a job like that.
Just the same, Bernie.
But until we can trip him up, or, more important, find out how he'll try to dispose of those stones...
I know, how to get him out of the country. Hey, but wait, his drug importing business. Country.
And any shipments he makes will be gone over with a fine-tooth comb. Unknown to him, of course.
Yeah?
What do you mean by that?
Well, if he did take these stones, he'll know everything you're doing.
Maybe. You're thinking, of course, about how they were gotten out of the country before, in those cases of canned goods you found in Paris.
Yes. I'm also thinking how impossible it would be to dispose of them here in the U.S.
Even broken down? Taken out of the settings?
Oh, look, Bernie, the distinctive color of the canary diamonds, all of them perfectly match. That color's so unique that, well, he'd have to get them abroad. But where and how?
Dollar, all we can do is keep an eye on him. Of course, keep an eye open for anyone else who might have stolen
him. Well, Bernie, I'll concentrate on him.
But what'll you do? I mean, that we're not already doing. Well?
Bernie, I haven't the least idea. Oh, sure. Maybe someone else had taken those stones. But I've played my hunches before, and somehow they've usually paid off. And sure, if Mickey did steal them... Why, maybe he was smart enough to simply sit tight for a while until things cooled down. I looked up the address in a phone book, then spent item three, a dollar even for a cab, to a small building on South 23rd Street marked O'Banion Drug Imports. It was a small kind of store building with a combination office and sales room in the front. Much to my surprise, there was only one person there.
That's right, Michael J. O'Banion.
Well, sir, my name is Russell. Peter Russell.
Mr. Russell?
Yes, sir, I own a small chain of drugstores in the South. And we get a lot of calls for anything unusual down there. Our customers seem to go for unusual, exotic-type drugs and medicines.
Oh, so I understand.
So when I saw your ad in the Yellow Pages, I thought I might take a look at your stock.
Oh, fine. Everything we catalog is right here on these display shelves.
All right, sir.
Yeah, pick out whatever items you like. I'll be glad to ship them to you. Everything from... dried seahorses and kelp, the Oriental people go for those things, to rare items like oil of rhodium, lovage, musk,
yes,
and...
Yes, sir. I see y'all import a lot of things from China, Japan.
Well, I have contacts in Hong Kong and Kowloon that furnish me with many unusual items.
Excuse me, Mr. O'Banion.
Yes, I'll be with you in a moment, madam. Mrs. Peterson.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, we met at the travel office, and you promised me some...
Yes, of course, Mrs. Peterson. I have the bottle of nerve pills I promised you right here.
Oh, I'm so glad. And how much do I owe you for them?
Oh, not a thing. Not a cent. Glad to have been able to make them up for you.
Well...
Here you are.
Aren't you nice? Such a big bottle, too.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Mrs. Peterson. Well, have a nice trip.
I hope I can... swallow such big pills.
Yeah, well, you just chew them like candy.
Well, they don't taste bad.
Just like sugar pills.
Well, how nice.
And remember, keep them in this bottle with its special seal and take only one each day. Goodbye.
My goodness, there are so many of them.
Yes, I'm sure they'll...
And you're so nice to have gotten them for me.
Yeah, that's perfectly
well,
all right,
Mrs. I'm just sure I'll have no nerves at all on this tour.
Yes, well, that's good. Now, if you'll just excuse...
I'll tell you. I'll send you a postcard when we get to Hong Kong and let you know
how
they work.
That's not necessary at all. And goodbye, Mrs. Peterson.
Well, I certainly thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure. Goodbye. Well, now we can get back to business.
Are you always so nice to your customers, O'Banion?
Just a minute.
Yeah?
Forgot your phony accent, didn't you?
My phony...
That voice. I'd know that voice anywhere from the radio.
The radio?
Johnny Dollar.
So?
I should have known it when you talked about a non-existent ad in the Yellow Page.
So I pulled a boo-boo.
Listen, Dollar. If the police sent you around here, if you think I had anything to do with those canary diamonds...
Well?
Neither you nor anybody else can prove it. So, Dollar, if you know what's good for you...
Oh, now that's a corny line.
If you want to stay alive, just leave me alone.
Make this Thanksgiving something special. How? By taking lots and lots of pictures. Just think of all the wonderful moments you can capture forever. Mom in the kitchen making dressing. That big moment when Dad starts slicing the turkey. The look on the kids' faces when they select their pie. Dad snoozing in his favorite chair after dinner. Yes, pictures are the best way to make those moments last forever. But only with Flash can you capture all the fun and color of those moments at their best, anytime, anywhere. That's why now, today, you should pick up a pack of Sylvania Blue Dot Flash Bulbs, the world's largest selling brand. Sylvania Blue Dots work with any film, with any camera, and you can always be sure they'll work. Simply look at the little blue dot. Sylvania puts it there as your assurance that it will fire. If by some rare chance it has turned pink, then return the bulb to your dealer. He'll make good on it. But hurry, Thanksgiving is this Thursday. Get your Sylvania Blue Dot Flash Bulbs today. And now, Act Three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
There in Mickey O'Banion's phony import office, things began to add up. Before he recognized me, he'd said something about contacts in Hong Kong and Kowloon. Great smuggling country. And the little old lady, Mrs. Peterson, to whom he'd given the nerve pills. She said she'd met him in a travel office. Was he making arrangements for a trip out of the country? Yeah, another thing, that bottle of pills. He'd made them up, he said. Big pills, remember that? Take only one of them a day, he told her. Well, by the time she got to Hong Kong, she could only use a few of them off the top of that bottle. It must have held a couple of hundred of them. Now, once in Hong Kong, one of his contacts... Or would he himself be there by then? Yeah, but I needed proof. And I certainly couldn't trick an old hand like Mickey into a confession. Far from it.
You think I don't know the cops are watching me every minute, going through every package I try to ship out of here?
All right, now listen, Mickey.
Do you think I'd be fool enough to touch those stones in the first place?
Fool enough or smart enough?
Oh, I'm smart enough, darling. Don't you forget it. Until you can show some kind of proof. You stay away from me before I...
Before you what?
All right, go on, get out.
Sure. Why not? If only I'd had sense enough to follow that Mrs. Peterson. While I was standing there talking to Mickey, she could be on her way to a plane, a train, or a steamship. Item four, $1.30 in a phone booth, calling every travel agency, airline, steamship, company, railroad I could find listed until I got the one who'd arranged her round-the-world tour. That was due to leave in a few hours. Item five is $1.25 taxi fare to the Bellevue.
Bellboy.
Well,
Just
Mrs.
Just a minute. All packed now, Bellboy. And you... Oh.
Mrs. Peterson.
Why, you're the young man I saw a little while ago.
I want that bottle of pills you got from Mr. O'Bannon.
Now, look here.
Where are they?
I'm a very nervous woman.
All right, my name is Dollar, special investigator.
Investigator?
That's right.
That's like a detective.
That's right. Now, please, those nerve pills.
I haven't done anything wrong.
You will if I don't stop you.
What? No, you're a robber. A burglar or something.
Oh, look, listen to me, will you please?
I'm so nervous.
Then why don't you take one of those pills? Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. Yes, I will.
While I dig out some credentials to prove I'm telling you the truth.
Here. Now, here they are.
All right, here are my credentials. And let me have this bottle.
Johnny Dollar, freelance. But you're selling them.
Now, they can't all be loaded with...
Let me have one of those pills so I can... Here, now.
All right, that one you took. Maybe from the bottom of the bottle. Because of the way they fell on the table when I spilled
now,
them out.
What possible difference could... Oh. Oh, my dear, I've broken a tooth.
No, you haven't. All right, spit it out into my hand.
I certainly will
not. Come on, come on.
All right. Here.
Broken tooth, huh?
What?
Ever see a more perfect yellow diamond than this?
Diamond?
Over a carat, I'd say. No wonder he had to make the pill so big.
But I don't...
Oh, and what a beautiful stunt. Who'd ever think to question a bottle of nerve pills carried to Hong Kong by such a sweet, pretty little old lady?
Well, but...
And once there, either Mickey or one of his pals would take them away from him.
Mr. Dollar...
But instead, we'll just dissolve the sugar coating off the rest of these and... Mrs. Peterson...
Well, yes, Mr. Dollar...
How would you like some extra spending money on this trip? Say, a couple of $1,000?
A couple of $1,000?
And all you have to do is come along with me and tell the police where you got this bottle of pills.
But I'm afraid I still...
Well?
Well, of course.
Proof! That was all Lieutenant Berry needed. The Canary Diamonds are home again. And that'll save Philly Mutual from having to pay off a big claim. And Eastern Trust and Insurance has plenty of reason to drop O'Banion as a client. After all, he ought to be out of circulation for a long, long time. Expense account total $2,044.25. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment.
Constipation is something people don't talk about much, but it can be a problem for anyone, even doctors. And when constipation occurs, it's interesting to see just what doctors consider important about a laxative they might use or recommend. Well, a majority of the doctors we heard from had this to say.
A laxative should be effective, gentle, close to natural acting. A medicine that can be used with complete confidence.
Now, X-Lax has been popular with many doctors and millions of people over the years because pleasant-tasting chocolated X-Lax is effective. Overnight, it helps you toward your normal regularity. X-Lax is so gentle, so close to natural acting, there's no upset. That's why many doctors and millions of people use X-Lax with complete confidence. X-Lax, the laxative that helps you toward your normal regularity gently, overnight.
Now here's our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, one of the roughest, toughest, and most unusual investigations I ever get involved in. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Chet Stratton, Harry Bartell, Barney Phillips, and Paul Fries. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is John Wall speaking.
Stay tuned now for another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
You're tuned to Radio 590 WROW in Albany, New York.
The story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes. King size, extra mild and soothing, brings you Dragnet on both radio and television.
You're an investigating sergeant. You're assigned to Traffic Division, AID. Death and tragedy is forecast for the people of your city. You don't know who the victims will be. You don't know how many there will be. Your job? Try and stop it. Compare Fatima with any other king-size cigarette.
Yes, compare Fatima with any other king-size cigarette.
One, Fatima's length filters the smoke 85 millimeters for your protection.
Two, Fatima's length cools the smoke for your protection.
Three, Fatima's length gives you those extra puffs, 21% longer than standard cigarette size.
Fatima gives you more for your money.
And in king-size Fatima, you get an extra mild and soothing smoke, plus the added protection of Fatima quality. Buy Fatima in the bright, sunny yellow pack.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, From Crime to Punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Thursday, July 3rd. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of traffic division, accident investigation. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Deputy Chief Caldwell. My name's Friday. I was on the way back from the scene of the accident, and it was 9:42 p.m. when I got to Georgia Street Receiving Hospital, second floor, treatment room 5.
Joe?
Hi. How's it going?
Not too good.
How are they?
Bad, all four of them. Girl who was riding in the front seat, both legs crushed.
Oh, no.
Talking to Doc Hall, nothing he can do. Gonna have to amputate.
That's a shame. All the parents been notified?
Yeah, they're on their way down now. Cigarette?
Yeah, thanks.
I got a match.
All right, thank you.
Still touch and go with the kid who was driving, the Wheeler boy. Doc doesn't give him much of a chance.
Possible to get a statement from him?
No, still unconscious. They get pictures of the wreck, all right?
Yeah, they did. The car the kids were in laid down 207 feet of skid marks.
Mm.
From the condition of the car, it's a wonder any of them are alive. Not a straight piece of metal in the wreck, Frank. How about that couple in the sedan they sideswiped?
Doctor isn't sure. Both have internal injuries. Woman's right leg is fractured. Man has a possible concussion. Lousy thing.
Every one of them's old enough to know better. What made them think they could get away with it?
Mm.
Oh, hi, Doctor.
Friday?
Any change, Doc?
Which one you mean?
The Wheeler boy?
No, still the same. The other three kids are doing a little better. It's a shame. None of them are more than 14, 15 years old, are they?
Both the girls are 13. Wheeler boy's 16, and the other boy's 12.
Yeah. Pretty young to be out alone burning up the streets. How'd it happen?
Well, one of the girls told us that the Wheeler boy picked up the three of them about 8 o'clock tonight. Asked him if they wanted to go for a ride in his father's new car.
Uh-huh.
Well, they thought they were going down to the neighborhood drive-in for a Coke.
Yeah.
Well, the girl said they drove around the neighborhood for a while. Wheeler boy was bragging about what a good driver he was, how fast the car'd go. Kept telling the kids that he could drive as fast as his father did.
Yeah. Well, I hear it's too bad you can't hold a father.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious he didn't set much of an example. Well, the girl told us that the Wheeler boy drove down the highway. She spotted a police car behind him and told the Wheeler kid to slow up. He said something like, "My father outran a cop the other day. If he can do it, I know I can." Well, the kids pleaded with him to pull over and stop, and he wouldn't listen. Told him to shut up and hang on, and he'd show him some real fancy driving.
Had to chase him more than 19 miles, Doc. Car in pursuit radioed in for help. We tried to block off the intersections ahead of him. They were just going too fast.
How'd the boy crack up?
Sideswiped the sedan with that old couple in it. Lost control of the car, went into a skid. The car hit the curb, blew a tire, piled head-on into a parked truck. The impact drove the engine of the truck right back into the cab. I never saw anything like it.
Yeah.
The car the kids were in is almost broken in half.
Well, I've done everything I can for him. I'll keep the Wheeler boy in the critical room. Nurse is in there with him now. I'll move the other three back into the ward.
We want to make our report, Doc. You got an MT slip on them?
Yeah, I just finished it. It's right in here.
Thank you.
You know, I got a 16-year-old boy, Freddie. Every time I make one of these things out, I say a prayer.
Yeah.
Hope they never have to make one out for my boy. Well, excuse me. I better go back in there and check on that youngster.
All right, Doc. Thanks.
Look at this MT, Frank. Everything in the book.
What's that?
Listen. Grace Andrews, 13 years, occupation student. Fractured jaw, teeth knocked out, facial cuts, internal injuries, crushed pelvis, and shock. Here's the next one. Nancy Haynes, 13 years, occupation student. Deep facial cuts, compound fractures of the right and left legs, crushed chest, possible concussion and shock. The other boy, Walter Stewart, 12 years, occupation student. Deep facial cuts and contusions, shock and possible concussion. Fractured ribs, possible puncture of the left lung, left hand severed above the knuckles. Here's the slip on the Wheeler boy. Charles Wheeler, 16 years, occupation student. Crushed forehead. Possible spinal fracture. Both legs broken. Fractured ribs, broken pelvis, deep facial cuts, severe internal injuries, and shock.
My name's Wheeler. Where's my boy? What have they done with him?
All right, take it easy, Mr. Wheeler. Doctor will be out in a minute.
I don't want the doctor. I want to see my boy. Where is he? What happened anyway?
Would you keep your voice down, please? The doctor will see you in a minute. He's with your son now.
Who are you? What do you know about it?
Police officers. Your boy had an accident. We're investigating
it. I know he had an accident. They already told me that. Whose fault was it? Who ran into him?
Nobody ran into him, Mr. Wheeler. The accident was his fault.
What do you mean? It couldn't have been. That boy's a good driver. I taught him myself.
Would you keep your voice down, please?
I want to get to the bottom of this thing. I want to see my boy. What are you stalling me for?
Nobody's stalling you, sir. You can see your boy as soon as the doctor okays it.
I'm going to take him to my own doctor. I wouldn't trust my boy in a place like this. Who ordered him here anyway?
We did. It was an emergency. The ambulance took him here from the scene of the accident.
Well, you still haven't told me how it happened. Now, why do you say it was his fault? Why are you accusing him?
It was his fault, Mr. Wheeler. There's no doubt about it. He was speeding, and a police car tried to catch him. He tried to outrun him. In the process, he ran into a parked truck.
I knew it wasn't his fault.
Sir?
So he was going a little too fast. Charlie's a good driver. Why'd you have to chase him? Probably the cause of the whole thing. You're the ones to blame.
All right, take it easy, Mr. Wheeler.
Take it easy, nothing. Why couldn't you let the kid alone? He can drive as well as I can. Think I'd let the kid have my new car if he couldn't handle it?
What about a driver's license, sir? Your son have one?
Well, no, I didn't have a chance to get him one. Too busy to take him down there for the test. It's a stupid thing anyway. Any moron can pass it. The point is, you didn't have to chase him. He wasn't hurting anybody, was he? I taught him how to drive. He drives just like I do. He's a fast driver, but he's a good one. I ought to know.
Our radio cars had to chase your boy 19 miles, Mr. Wheeler. 11 cars chased him. Your boy was endangering the life of everybody on that highway. In a 25-mile-an-hour zone, he was clocked at better than 70 miles an hour. At one time, we figured he must have been doing better than 90. He went through a dozen boulevard stops. He barely missed a woman pedestrian. The woman had a baby in her arms. Just before he cracked up, he sideswiped another car, an old couple in it. They're in this hospital, too, and they're hurt. They're hurt bad. Now, you go ahead inside and make those two old people believe your son's a good driver, that he's just having some innocent fun, will you?
It's not all his fault. He probably wouldn't have done it if you didn't chase him. I know my boy can handle a car. I've raced cops myself once in a while. Charlie was with me. He's cool. He knows what he's doing behind the wheel. Just because you drive fast doesn't make you a bad driver.
It helps.
Frank? Yeah, Doc. Can you spare a minute?
Sure. What is it? This is Mr. Wheeler, father of the boy who was driving the car. This is Dr. Hall.
Where's Charlie? I want to see him.
I'm sorry, sir. You'll have to wait a few minutes. He's lost a lot of blood. They're getting him another transfusion.
What's the matter with him? How bad is he hurt?
There's a report. Read it yourself.
What kind of treatment are you giving him? You sure you know what you're doing?
I think so. I've been on this job for 11 years. That's how long I've been dealing with fools like you.
What?
I heard you ranting and raving out here at these offices. Well, let me tell you this, mister. All three of you were wrong. That boy of yours lying in there isn't to blame. You are his own father. You were driving that car tonight. I heard you ranting out here. You taught him how to drive. He can drive as well as you can. He's cool. He knows how to handle a car. You taught him how to race cops. Well, the results are inside, Mr. Wheeler.
Look here, I don't want any sermons from you. I want to see my boy. I want to see him right now.
You're not going to get any sermons from me. They wouldn't help you. But I'm going to tell you what's on my mind. I've seen your kind for years. I've sewed them up, I've patched them up, and I've pulled a sheet over their face. So far, you're lucky it hasn't happened to you. You're on borrowed time. Must be true what they say. The good Lord takes care of the fools and the drunks. Well, I can tell you now, I wouldn't feel half as bad if it was you inside there on that bed instead of your son. Oh, when are people like you going to learn? When are you going
to
learn?
I came down here to see my son. You're not impressing me a bit.
Well, then maybe you ought to come down here some weekend, some holiday. Maybe that'd impress you. You stand inside that treatment room with me and watch them come over that table. A lot of them come in married and go out widowed, all kinds, all ages. They pull them out of the wrecks and they drag them in here and they expect miracles from us. They're battered and broken, and some of them you have to look twice because it's hard to tell the human beings. You know who's responsible, Mr. Wheeler? You know who? Arrogant, egotistical, good, fast drivers like you. Well, I'm sick of you, Mr. Wheeler. I'm sick of the whole rotten, stupid mess. I'm sick of fools like you.
Dr. Hall?
Yeah?
See you a moment, please.
Yeah, all right.
Sure makes himself out an expert, doesn't he? He preaches to everybody who comes in here?
No, matter of fact, he's usually pretty quiet.
Well, what's the matter with him? Get out of the wrong side of bed?
Maybe this will explain it. He's got a 16-year-old boy of his own.
Well, what's he beefing about? It's my kid that's hurt, not his.
Every kid he treats is his.
Mr. Wheeler.
Is it all right? Can I see Charlie now?
Yeah.
Thanks. I'm sorry about everything, Doctor. I really am. I'm sorry.
So am I, Mr. Wheeler. Your boy's dead.
When George Wheeler recovered from the initial shock of his son's death, we told him it was necessary that the body be removed to the county morgue, where an autopsy would be performed the following day. After that, his son's remains would be available to a mortuary of the family's choosing. Frank and I drove back to the office where we filed a 311 dead body report on 16-year-old Charles Wheeler. After that, we called the coroner's office and notified them to pick up the body at Georgia Street Receiving Hospital. 10:35 p.m. We left the traffic division garage and went back on the air. We were cruising the central area. 10:53 p.m. We got the call. Aliso and Spring, ambulance follow-up, victim of a hit-and-run driver. We were within a block of the call.
Must be it up ahead, Joe, on the corner.
Oh, yeah. You can pull up any place right here, I guess. All right, come on. Slide out my side, huh?
Yeah. Let us through, please. Police officers, excuse me.
Pardon me. I wonder if I can get through here, please. Excuse us. Excuse me.
Doctor? You fellas doctors?
No, we're police officers.
Oh, yeah, I see. Where's the ambulance?
Be here in a minute. How'd it happen?
The old man was trying to cross the street. A bus hit him. Yeah, look at him. Terrible, poor old guy. You work around here? Yeah, I sell papers right over in that corner over there. My name's Harry Johansson. You want me for a witness?
Frank, get his name and address, will you? I'll check the old man.
Yeah, right.
All right, now don't move around, Dad. Don't try to get up. The ambulance will be here in a minute.
I'm hurt. Bad. Terrible pain in my back.
Your legs hurt you, Dad?
No. I don't feel a thing in my legs. It's just my back. I got a terrible pain.
What's your name?
Clyde Logan.
Where do you live, Dad?
Over there, just up in the corner. Apartment 37. Hey, could you go over and see Leona, see if she's All right, she's going to be awful worried.
Yeah, we'll take care of it. You been drinking, Dad?
Well, just a nightcap. The doctor said I ought to have it, a glass of port every night. I was just on my way home when it happened. Oh, my God.
You sure it was just a glass of port, Dad?
Yeah, that's right. I never touch anything but that glass of port before I go to bed. Say, would you please send somebody to see about Will in apartment 37? He's going to be awful worried.
Yes, sir, we'll take care of it.
Oh, this feels terrible. I got to get up. Help me up, will you, officer?
All right, you sure you feel up to it, Dad?
I don't know. It's an awful pain in my back. I know I'm not supposed to move till the ambulance gets here, but maybe it'll go away if I stand up.
All right, sir. Here you go.
Easy now.
Frank, see you in a minute?
Yeah.
Cancel the ambulance, will you? We don't need it.
Hmm?
Cancel it. Call the wagon.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, I'm going to get help, Sergeant. Are they coming for me?
Yeah, you're going to get help, Dad. It's on the way.
I come to the corner here, and I started to cross over. And what do you think? Right out of nowhere, this big red bus come up the street. It must have been going 60. Hit me and kept right on going. I thought for a minute there I was gone for sure.
Did you say it was a big red bus?
It's red or blue. What's the difference? They run me down. Oh, look at that. Get the ambulance quick. Look at that.
What's that?
My shirt front here. Look, it's all red. It's blood. Get some help. I'm bleeding to death. Get some help. Oh, there's a sharp pain in my ribs.
Well, let's take your coat off here. That's the idea.
That's better. The pain's gone now.
Yeah, well, I don't know what your blood type is, Dad, but you're bleeding port wine.
Oh, no.
Worse than you thought it was, Dad. You broke your bottle of port.
It's all wrapped up in papers, too. It's a wonder how it happened. Just look at my brand new shirt, all that good wine.
Joe, no, I canceled the ambulance, called communications for the wagon. What's the score?
Say, would you please send somebody up to my place to see Leona? It's apartment 37, building right up in the corner. Please look after Leona.
Yeah, we'll tell her, Dad.
Oh, say, when you see her, would you please give her this?
What's this?
Piece of liver. Leona just loves liver.
Well, I didn't know you were married, Clyde. When'd that happen?
I'm not married.
And then who's Leona?
That's my cat, the best friend I got in the world. Hey, where's the ambulance?
No, there's not going to be any ambulance, Dad. We've got a car coming instead.
Listen, I'm a sick man, Sergeant. I need an ambulance.
You're a hit-and-run victim every time you get enough port wine, Dad.
I don't know what you mean. It's a glass of port every night. That's all I ever take.
What time do you think it is now?
Time? I don't know. I went over to Jack. It's about 8 o'clock. Must be 8:15, 8:30. Why?
It's 10 minutes past 11, Dad. You're overdue.
You get it, Joe. What's the pitch?
Don't you know him?
No, I don't think so.
Clyde Logan. Got an arrest sheet as long as your arm. Somebody down at Central tagged him with the name Hit and Run Logan. He's a town character.
Well, what's the idea of the hit and run story?
Oh, he likes attention. Every time he gets loaded, he likes to ride in an ambulance with a siren wide open, so he lays down in the street, pretend he's been hit.
I see.
Every city's got at least one of them, I guess. Some of them turn in fire alarms. Some of them confess to murder. Some of them just beat their wives. Clyde likes to be a hit and run victim.
See, what are you going to do? You're going to lock me up?
No choice, Dad.
I suppose not. Say, would you talk to the jailer and see if I could get my old job back? I mean, you know, anything in the kitchen. I like to work in the kitchen.
Yeah, all right, we'll talk to him.
And now, just one more thing.
Yeah?
Would you go see Jackie Martin for me? Place right up the street there. You know, you see the sign there?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Jackie's old-time wine shop. That's the place. Well, you go in there and you ask for Jackie. You tell him that I sent you. See, you can say that he's not going to get any more of my business. You tell him I won't even pay him what I owe him.
Well, what's the matter, Dad? Why are you mad at him?
Well, I got good enough reason. All the trade that I've given him and all the money I spent there and double-crosser. He can't keep customers that way, and he'll find that out.
What do you mean, Dad?
Well, look, right here on the sidewalk.
Yeah?
Jackie Martin, him and his cheap bottles.
You are listening to Dragnet, authentic stories of your police force in action. Friends, because of its quality, its extra mildness, its better flavor and aroma, more smokers coast to coast are switching to king-size Fatimas every day. Yes, more smokers coast to coast are finding that in Fatima, the difference is quality. Now, here's the practical way to prove Fatima quality yourself.
Compare Fatima with any other king-size cigarette.
One. Fatima's length filters the smoke 85 millimeters for your protection.
2. Fatima's length cools the smoke for your protection.
3. Fatima's length gives you those extra puffs, 21% longer than standard cigarette size.
Fatima gives you more for your money.
And in king-size Fatima, you get an extra mild and soothing smoke, plus the added protection of Fatima quality.
Remember, more and more of your friends are switching to king-size Fatimas.
Compare them yourself. King-size Fatima, extra mild and soothing, plus the added protection of Fatima quality. Look for the bright, sunny yellow pack. Buy king-size Fatima.
Thursday, July 3rd, 11:30 p.m. There was still half an hour to go before the July 4th weekend even started. But in the last 7.5 hours, Central Traffic had answered 13 major accident calls. 4 of them were fatalities. If it was any indication of the next 72 hours, the 4th of July weekend was due to spell death and tragedy for more people than we figured. 12:10 a.m., we received another ambulance follow-up call, this time at 11th and Georgia. A young couple on a motorcycle trying to beat the stop signal had crashed headlong into the side of an eastbound bus. One was taken to the hospital, one was taken to the county morgue. 12:20 a.m., after taking care of the necessary reports, we impounded the motorcycle. The next half hour was fairly quiet. 12:55 a.m., we went off the air and stopped to have a cup of coffee. 1:15 a.m., we called back in service. We continued cruising the central area. At 1:48 a.m., 12 minutes before quitting time, we got a call for Wilshire and Toberman Street, an ambulance follow-up, city property damage, motor officer. 1:15 a.m., we arrived at the scene. Approximately 20 feet from the southwest corner, a police motorcycle was sprawled on the street. The front of it was demolished. About 30 feet from the motorcycle, lying face down in the street, was the figure of a man in a police uniform.
All right, would you step back, please? Up on the
sidewalk. Please, everybody, back up there on the sidewalk, please.
Help me, please.
All right, don't try to move, fella.
It's a Brian.
Hey, Mike. Mike?
He tried to miss it. Couldn't help it.
Take it easy now. Don't try to talk.
Ambulance is on the way, Mike.
Don't kid me, Joe. Chest. My chest hurts. Hey, but my collar. Can't breathe.
Yeah, all right, sure, Mike. Come on, take it easy now. Don't move.
Chasing this car. Cream convertible. Man, woman. Think he was a 502. Big chase. Red light. Siren. Siren.
All right, now take it easy, Mike. Relax,
man. Other car turn. Other car turn right in front of me. I saw it. Nothing I could do. Couldn't stop. Turn right in front of me. Evelyn. Gonna go see her. Evelyn. She's waiting.
All right, will you take it easy, Mike? Don't talk and don't move. This will work out all right. Take it easy.
Joe. Evelyn. Evelyn. Joe.
Mike. Mike.
Joe got a coat here. Slip it under his head and be more comfortable.
No, he doesn't need a prank. He's comfortable.
At 1:57 a.m., the ambulance arrived and O'Brien's body was removed to the county morgue. Photographs were taken, diagrams were drawn, and statements taken from the witnesses. A truck from Central Garage arrived and started removing the dead officer's motorcycle. Frank and I went over and started interviewing the driver of the car which O'Brien had collided with. She identified herself as Corrine Norton, a bookkeeper at a South Los Angeles defense plant.
I was making a left turn, that's all. Next thing I knew, he hit my car. You can see what he did to it. Who's going to pay for the damage?
We can talk about that later, Miss Norton. Our first concern is we'd like to find out what happened.
Well, there's nothing to it. I already told you. This cop ran into me. There wasn't anything I could do.
Well, would you start from the beginning, please, and tell us exactly what happened?
From the beginning of what? I told you. You ran into my car. What more do you want to know? Sorry it happened, but I couldn't help it. Look at my car. How am I going to get to work in the morning?
Will you please tell us what happened here, miss? Just as near as you can remember.
Well, I was going down this way on Wilshire on my way home. I started to make a left turn onto Toberman, and this cop on the motorcycle drove right into me. Wasn't anything I could do. His fault. I couldn't help it.
Could we see your operator's license, please?
Certainly. Let's see it. There's someplace. Yeah, here it is.
All right, you want to read it off, Frank?
Yeah. California operator's license number B208-927.
Okay, got it.
Corrine, C-O-R-I-N-N-E-M, Norton.
Mm-hmm.
10,033 Ruth Ellen, Los Angeles.
10,033.
Right. Female, 5'3½, 123 pounds.
Uh-huh.
Born February 18th, 1909. Blue eyes, brown hair.
Uh-huh.
Must wear adequate glasses.
Just a minute.
Okay. You have your glasses with you, Miss Norton?
Well, yes, right here in my purse. I really don't have to wear them. I can see just as well without them.
Were you wearing your glasses at the time of the accident?
Yes, I was. I took them off right after the accident. Here they are, right here in my purse. See?
Miss Norton, we understand the motorcycle officer had his red light and siren in operation at the time of this accident. Did you see it or hear it?
No, I didn't hear any siren, and I certainly didn't see any red light.
And when's the first time you saw the officer, ma'am?
When he hit me. He seemed to come out of nowhere. He was going very fast.
You say you were in the process of making a left turn. Is that right, Miss Norton? Did you give a hand signal indicating that you were going to turn?
Of course I did. I always do.
You touched your car since the accident.
What do you mean if I touched it?
Was your car just like it was when you were driving it prior to the accident?
Yes, I suppose it is. I mean, with the exception of the damage he did.
You're sure you gave a hand signal, Miss Norton?
Of course I am. What's this all about, anyway?
Well, if your car's exactly the way it was before the accident, and you're telling us the truth here, how do you account for the fact that the left-hand window of your car is still rolled up here?
What?
The window of the driver's side of your car there, it's closed tight. You couldn't have made a left-hand signal, now could you?
Well, I don't understand it. I'm sure I made a signal. I think so, anyway. Are you trying to say I'm to blame for that cop's death?
We're not trying to say anything, ma'am. We're trying to get the facts here.
Well, you certainly have a funny way of doing it. What do you call facts, anyway? Trying to incriminate me in this thing? I was making a left turn and he ran into me. It's as simple as that. I don't know what you're so excited about.
The man just died, Miss Norton. We're trying to find out why.
Well, why ask me? I didn't kill him, speeding along on a motorcycle like that. He shouldn't have been going that fast anyway.
That's his job, ma'am. That's what they pay him for. He was chasing a drunk driver.
All right, that's his job. He knew it was dangerous when he took it.
Yes, ma'am.
Part of his job, that's what we pay him for.
Well, he's dead, Miss Norton. Who's going to pay him for that? 2:15 a.m. A traffic car took Corrine Norton downtown to the station where her statement was to be taken and a further investigation made. Frank and I contacted Sergeant Joe Whitehead of the medical detail and informed him of Mike O'Brien's death. He told us he'd notify the business office and the parents of the dead officer. Because of our close association with O'Brien, we happened to know that he planned to get married July 15th, the first day of his vacation. The girl he was going to marry was an Evelyn Monroe. She lived in the Silver Lake District. We told Whitehead that we'd notify her. 2:30 p.m., Frank and I drove out Sunset Boulevard to the girl's house.
Oh, hi, Frank. Joe.
Oh, hi. Is
Mike with you?
Well, no, he isn't, Evelyn.
Well, come on in. Have some coffee. I'm just waiting for Mike.
All right, thank you.
Guess Mike's a little late tonight. Come on in. How do you like your coffee, cream and sugar?
Black will be all right, thanks, both of us.
Look at the dining room table. Pretty nice, isn't it?
Yeah, Evelyn, it's very nice.
Nicest wedding present I think I've ever seen. Didn't know we had so many friends. You see what the boys in the motor squad sent us? Electric mixer, all the attachments, too.
Yeah, we see them. Very nice.
What's the matter, Joe? Hard day?
Yeah, it was. It was a tough one.
Oh, you're just like Mike. When he gets off work, he's grumpy as a bear. I don't know why. Nothing tough about your job. You ought to work for the man I work for. Coffee's coming right up.
Joe, you're going to have to tell her I can't. Do me a favor.
Yeah, I'll try.
Here you are. I think you ought to like these donuts. I get them at the bakery down the street. Mike's crazy about them.
Would you sit down, Evelyn, please? I'd like to talk to you.
Oh, sure, Joe. You sound serious. What's the matter?
It's about Mike, Evelyn.
Mike? What about him?
Well, he wanted us to come by and see you. He was hurt tonight.
Oh, no. Was it bad?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
What happened? Where is he? Can I see him?
No, not now. A little later.
What happened? They told his mother and dad?
Yeah, Evelyn. Joe Whitehead's out there now.
Joe Whitehead? Medical detail?
Yeah, that's right.
He usually doesn't go out right away unless they're dead. Joe? Joe, tell me the truth. What's happened to Mike? What's happened?
Well, he's dead, Evelyn.
No. It isn't the truth. He can't be dead.
He was chasing a drunk driver over on Wilshire. Woman turned in front of him. Couldn't get out of the way. Didn't have a chance to lay his bike down. Sorry.
It's not true. Can't be, it's not true. He called me at 11. He'll be here at any minute. He'll be here any minute. Mike. Mike.
Oh, Evelyn, please. There's nothing you can do. There's nothing anyone can do. Crying would help. I'd cry with you.
But it's not right. It isn't right. Why should he die? Why should he?
I'm sorry. Went fast. He didn't suffer. Talked about you. The last thing was about you.
Hard to realize. I can't understand it. I can't. No reason for it.
No reason for a lot of it.
Why, Joe? Why did he have to die? Why did he?
I don't know. I got an idea, maybe.
Why?
Somebody forgot to put out their arm.
The story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On October 2nd, an inquest was held at the county morgue, city and county of Los Angeles, state of California. The coroner's jury returned a verdict of excusable homicide in the death of motorcycle officer Michael O'Brien. In a moment, a word about another trial.
Now, here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you, George Fenneman. Friends, I know a lot of you listeners have taken my advice and switched to Fatima's. Now, if you haven't, how about comparing Fatima this weekend for sure? You see, Fatima quality stands out by comparison. That's why I ask you to try Fatima's. Compare them with the king-size cigarette you've been smoking. You'll find Fatima's give you more for your money. An extra mild and soothing smoke, plus the added protection of Fatima quality. Remember, king-size Fatimas in the bright, sunny yellow pack.
Normally, at this time, we give you the result or outcome of legal proceedings against a person or persons for criminal action. You've already heard the results of the documentary cases portrayed on Dragnet tonight. 4th of July weekend is at hand. 40 million automobiles will drive 5 billion miles. Please make every mile a safe mile. Be considerate of the other driver on the road and have a happy weekend. We don't want to read your name on Dragnet's trial page. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Vic Perrin, Stacy Harris, Vic Rodman. Script by Jim Moser. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
Ladies and gentlemen, you may now read Dragnet every day on the comic page of your favorite newspaper. Please consult your local daily paper. King Size Fatima has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
Yes, adventure is yours tonight with Counter Spy on NBC.
That's it for this episode of Case Closed. Hope you enjoyed the stories today. I'll be back next Wednesday with another hour of crime stories. In the meantime, there's more from Dragnet, yours truly, Johnny Dollar, Case Closed, all the other podcasts, our Shoutcast stream, and a donate button, all waiting for you at the website, relicradio.com. Your donations make all of this possible. Thank you, as always, to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for relicradio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.